Today's podcast is brought to you by our very first sponsor, NTK.
Woohoo!
Health IQ.
Thanks, Health IQ.
Mm-hmm. Health IQ is a new type of insurance company that gives preferential rates to healthy runners, swimmers, cyclists, triathletes, vegans.
You finally get rewarded for all the hard work that you do.
I know. It just makes too much sense. If you want to go and learn more about Health IQ, go to healthiq.com/triathlon Taryn. They have put all of the triathlon specific information there. Or if you go to the Health IQ website on your own, use the promo code triathlon Taryn at checkout or when you're speaking with a representative to get potentially up to a 25% savings on your life insurance. Our guest today is Mr. First Out of the Water in Kona, NTK, Josh Amberger.
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 Mm-hmm, not Amberger.
All North Americans and Europeans apparently have been saying it wrong for months
now. Not that he's upset about it.
Nope.
But we just found out we've been saying it wrong.
Yeah. Very fortunate enough to have Josh Amberger on the podcast, First Out of the Water in Kona. The rest of the race didn't necessarily go his way, but he learned a lot of lessons. Very talented athlete. If you take a look at the last few years of Josh's race career, it's just like podium after podium after podium. And I think we uncovered his secret sauce to that speed: coffee.
He travels with specific coffee supplies because he is so particular about his coffee. That could be the key.
Could be the key. Yeah. Well, then I'm on my way to being pro as well. I'm going to pack up the Keurig and we'll go.
Oh yeah. You're very exact in your tastes.
So we chat about that with Josh and we then obviously get into the race day at Kona. Some of the interesting things, obviously getting out of the water first, what that was like, missing his special needs bag out there.
Not good.
Could have been a race ender, but it
could
wasn't.
Could have been a disaster. We talked to him about what it will take for him to actually win. And I suspect given the trajectory he's on, that could happen sooner rather than later. And at the very end, we talk a little bit about this idea, something he said a couple of years ago about there's a sense of entitlement among a lot of pros. So we touch on that very briefly because it could be a big topic, but interesting thoughts.
Yeah, we would have had to dig deep on that. Mm-hmm. 2020, you would have been Barbara Walters and I was Hugh McDonald.
Nice.
Thank you, Josh, for being on the podcast and enjoy, everyone. We're here, ladies and gentlemen, with Josh Amberger. Where are you from right now, buddy? Are you in Brisbane?
Yeah, I'm in Brisbane. Just come back from swimming training. Actually, it's first week back training and yeah, everything's a bit sluggish at the moment. So I've locked myself into a cold, dark air-conditioned room at the moment to try and get myself to feel a bit better.
So it's 5 o'clock p.m. where we are. It is what time where you are?
It's just gone 10 a.m.
I love the time difference.
Yeah. And you just had a swim workout with Coach Cam Watt, right?
Yeah.
Did he beat up on you pretty bad? You said that we might have to push it back if he got a little bit overly anxious with you.
Oh, I mean, it was a pretty standard day. I think we did 4 kilometers or thereabouts. So in week one, that probably sounds like quite a lot for some people, but for us, it's not really a surprise. We spend most of the year swimming 6.5, 7K some days for most sessions. So our swim program is always like super demanding. So to only have 4K, it was a bit of an easy mark, to be honest. So it was nice.
So this was your first workout, and I guess that would mean it's sort of the beginning of your training season. How long have you been off? When was your last race? When did you last train?
My last race was the Island House Invitational Triathlon in the Bahamas. So that was the middle of November. And then me and my partner Ashley, she raced also. We took 3 weeks totally off. So we went away camping and we were able to unplug for a couple of weeks. And then I pretty much spent the next week just like cleaning up and storing all our gear and stuff. And then last week I was just doing kind of like one small session a day, 30 minutes to an hour. So you could hardly call it much training, but just a light introduction to training. And this week we're kind of on deck, you know, doing 2 to 3 sessions a day. So I guess you could say I had, you know, 3 weeks totally off and then 1 week just reintroduction.
But is your totally off the same as like a normal person's totally off? Or is it a quote unquote totally off like Taryn when he's off? He's never off. He still bike commutes or does all kinds of what he calls active recovery or whatever. Is it totally off though, really? Like, are you guys hiking kilometers while you're camping or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not totally off for me is never fully sedentary. I guess that's just the way that we're kind of wired as endurance athletes is we just love to keep moving. So where we go camping, it's a sand island. So it's the third largest sand island in the world. Where I am in Queensland, Australia, we've got this really unique kind of like sand drifts that form islands over, you know, millions of years. So it's the actual, wherever you're walking, you're literally like walking on sand. So it's kind of tough and it kind of keeps your legs robust, I guess. And we like to do some hikes and things while we're camping too. So it's not totally off, but I'm still very much feeling rested. But then the other hand is I also like to go out and have some beers with my friends and stuff most nights when I'm on a break. So there's definitely a lot of activity that is not normal throughout the season that I get up to on the break.
So before we get into the real hard-hitting questions, I was talking to Kim about some of the stuff that I've found out about you in the last couple of days. And the thing that like blew her freaking mind is that you always travel with a coffee maker or everything that you need to make coffee, not only just because of that, but because when she was in Australia.
I was in Australia. I was actually in Brisbane and on the Gold Coast and stuff. Everybody that I met and went to people's homes and stuff, nobody had a coffee maker. All anybody had was instant coffee.
So she calls like, BS on you. I don't think she buys it.
Yeah, right. That's quite interesting, really. I mean, they all probably told doesn't me. Tell me much about the demographic that you're hanging out with, but I know that a lot of young people are very quality focused with coffee in Australia.
They all said it was too hot to be brewing hot coffee in a coffee maker. That's what everybody's excuse was. Oh, we don't have a coffee maker. It's too hot. You know, if you want some coffee, here's the instant. Like, oh, well, this is awful, but okay.
Yeah, right. I mean, are you sure you were in Brisbane, Australia?
I was. I know.
Yeah, right.
Well, I was also in some of the smaller towns up along the coast as well. So that could, there might be a bit of a rural aspect to it, but anyway. Yeah. But okay, so then just...
How long ago was this, Kim?
Just a couple of years ago, I guess about 5 years ago.
Yeah, right.
I don't think so because you went there to see a boy and we were together.
Seven years ago. Sorry.
Uh-huh.
Seven.
Thank you. So what's your lineup? How do you travel with, like, are you going with espresso maker and like grinding the beans out on the road? What do you do?
Yeah, so I'm definitely traveling with like all the equipment I need to, obviously not a coffee roaster, but which I do happen to roast coffee as well at home. So, but I'm traveling with an AeroPress, which is, I find, the best because it's like super lightweight and, you know, it's perfect sort of for the style of coffee I like, for like light roast. So I travel with an AeroPress, a hand mill, which is obviously when you start to get into like quality hand mills, mine's like handmade German one. It actually weighs quite a lot. It weighs like 1.5 pounds or something. So that's kind of like the most cumbersome thing about traveling with a coffee maker, you know, a coffee setup. And the other problem with that is everyone in airport security always wants to take a look with it when I'm traveling through the security line because the steel burr in it. So I travel with that as well and obviously always have like a ton of fresh coffee on me. So you're
bringing your own coffee? Like you don't sample around the world as you go?
Oh, of course I like to sample, like, but I do feel like I need a bit of security with my supply. If there's anywhere that I can't find coffee to my taste or expectation, of course, it's always good to have stuff that I'm familiar with.
But that is intense.
The man's serious about his coffee.
Yeah,
I mean, it's actually like, it's an interesting thing for me to talk about because I've met like some fantastic people working in coffee while I've been traveling for triathlon. For instance, I've got the first year I went to Bend, Oregon for a training camp, I was sourcing out the best cafes in town and I ended up going to, it's called Thump Coffee and it's kind of like they've got a few stores in Bend, they've got a few stores in Denver as well. And I went to the roastery and tasting room and was served by the owner, which I didn't know at the time, and he happens to ride bikes. And we got chatting and talked a bit about coffee and cycling, and now sort of 5 years later, we got like this enduring friendship where to the point where I actually have a key to his roastery.
Really?
And I can go in there anytime I want. So it's a little hobby. Coffee is like a hobby that I do on the side as like a release from day-to-day triathlon. So, yeah, like it's, I definitely am a snob, but it's brought a lot of joy to me as well.
I'm into it. Do you have any pro coffee buddies? Like you're swapping recipes and like, oh, you got to try these beans? Or are you like, oh, yeah, you're the enemy. I'm not giving you the good beans.
No, we, so I have like this, you know, just a small roasting company that we do like mail order subscriptions and stuff with another pro triathlete. He's actually, well, just recently retired like 3 weeks ago. His name's Dan Wilson. He raced ITU for many years and has been winning like literally every 70.3 he's done since he switched over. So he's recently retired. We have like this little roasting company and we have like some other hobbyists that we chat to and share like roast profiles and, you know, quality stuff with. And yeah, it's definitely everyone in coffee's, it's a good little community, like the tri community as well.
Is your coffee better than Jan's is the big question.
Of course, it's depending what your taste is going to be like, but
am I to assume into, that Jan Frodeno roasts coffee as well? Is this the...
Yeah, Fredissimo versus Ambergimo.
Ambergimo.
I don't know if he's roasting it personally, but he's definitely got his name to some coffee. But I know Jan and I definitely have wildly different tastes. I've been at his place in Noosa and he makes me a coffee and I make him a coffee and maybe there's never too much satisfaction with what we're both trying. So definitely we're roasting coffee like very differently. So I think he's more into like a kind of second wave style of coffee, whereas we're into like more like a light roasted third wave.
I'm into it. We could talk about this for the entire 60 minutes,
and
I think.
I'm sure all the people listening are saying, I tuned in for bikes and swimming, not coffee. Yeah.
So, yeah, let's chat about the year.
Anytime I can head against Jan and reckon I can come out on top, I'd like to talk about that. I reckon our coffee tastes a bit better.
Nice. Well, we'll have to, one day we'll have to try it. I'd like to taste the, what did you call it?
Ambergimo.
Ambergimo.
Ambergimo versus Fredissimo. Yeah. And he hasn't been on the podcast yet. So you beat him to that. And this is like pinnacle of the podcast world, I think, in triathlon, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's what Sarah Crowley told me. So,
Nice. We're the tippy top. Yeah. Sarah. Thanks to Sarah for setting this up. So let's talk about your year. Like you had an absolute dropkick year all over the podium and I want to count like 12 races and on the podium and
most of them,
75-80%. Can you just kind of fill everyone in before we get into that? And I obviously want to talk about Kona. How'd you get into the sport?
I got into the sport a long time ago, about 15 years ago, maybe even earlier. It's like as a real young kid, did my first triathlon. Actually, now that I say it, I did my first triathlon when I was 9 years old. So that's 19 years ago. And I used to swim like really seriously as a young boy and at a national sort of age group level. And I felt as if I had like a really good projection in swimming until I just didn't really hit the growth spurt that all the other kids did when they were, you know, 12, 13, 14. I'm not a big guy. I'm 5'8", so I'm tiny. If you put me next to a swimmer.
You're triathlon like Terran size. I like it.
Yeah, there's like a night and day difference in you know, strength and power between me and a traditional swimmer's body. So I found my way into triathlon for more diversity. When I was, you know, 12 or 13 years old, just before I switched to triathlon, I was already swimming 8 to 10 sessions a week, you know, 4 or 5 of those sessions. I'm at 5:30 every morning and it just was like super grueling and I didn't see myself having a future in swimming at all. I just wasn't enjoying it. So triathlon was the perfect switch for me and I've just loved it ever since. And I've seen obviously a lot of phases of triathlon. I've always, since I was 16, I've always raced as an elite, whether it be like junior elite, under 23, and now myself as an Ironman professional. So I've seen many different and experienced many different iterations of triathlon. So this year in particular was my first full season as an Ironman athlete. So I'm 28 years old and felt as if my body would be able to handle the transition from 70.3 to Ironman well. I felt as if while I hadn't gotten a podium or anything at 70.3 Worlds, that I kind of achieved most of what I wanted to achieve in 70.3 and just really wanted to take that next step to Ironman. So yeah, this year was definitely about kind of like diving in head first into Ironman. And I did 2 regional championship races, which if you're unaware of what that is, it's basically like the level down of Ironman from Kona. So you've got 5 or 6, I can't remember, regional championship races on every continent. So I wanted to do them as like a good exposure to the distance where I'd be racing the best in the world. And I happened to win one of those in Cairns, Australia, which automatically qualified me for Kona. So within 6 months, I went from basically not knowing really anything about Ironman to then winning a major championship, then to training for Kona. So it was quite a spectacular year for me, really.
Yeah, definitely. Like that Cairns race, that was awesome. You set the new course record, right? But you said something in another interview that the South Africa race, that was your first Ironman, your first full distance Ironman, right?
Yeah, so there's actually... It was my first full finish Ironman. I attempted my first one the year earlier, but actually got disqualified in some really bad circumstances. Oh.
The question that I've got is, yeah, you get DQ'd in the one race and South Africa, you said that basically you got kicked around finishing, I want to say 18th place is what your website says, but then you come in and just totally drop it like it's hot in the Asia Pacific Championship. Did you think that you had that in you coming into Cairns?
Yeah, definitely. So there was a 10-week gap between Ironman South Africa and Ironman Cairns, and having that exposure in South Africa was exactly what I needed to be able to kind of refocus my training for that next 10 weeks in Cairns. So it was basically like getting my ass kicked in South Africa was just perfect preparation for Cairns, in the sense that I knew, okay, I had to get fitter. I knew that, yes, this is a distance that I want to perform in. I really enjoyed the race, so let's go assault Cairns. And it just gave me more time to be physically prepared for it, obviously. So having never raced Ironman before, there were so many things in South Africa that I was able to adjust in terms of like nutrition and so forth in that short period of time that helped me perform to a new level in Cairns.
So I want to pronounce it right. Are you saying Cairns? Are we leaving out the R? I don't know how to say it right, and I don't even want to say it. Cairns? Cairns?
Yeah, Cairns, definitely. It's funny always. I mean, Australians, we tend not to pronounce certain letters for some reason. I'm not sure. And it's actually always... It's always funny hearing Americans, like I could say, like overpronounce the words. You're not overpronouncing it, you're just saying it as you hear it, but or as you read it.
Right. I literally just did, and as it was coming out of my mouth, I'm like, this sounds really nerdy.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, you won that race with Sarah Crowley and I guess your teammates.
Yeah, so that was unreal, actually. You know, we'd both done pretty much every training session together and in the months leading into it. So I think we both definitely fed off each other a lot in the preparation for it. You know, I could see how much Sarah wanted it, and then that would make me want it more. And it was just like a really good environment to be in training with Sarah for the same event. Yeah, just like a really good synergy, I guess. And on race day, we didn't really, the course is kind of lent towards not knowing much about where your competitors are until you get to the run. It's 3 laps, and each lap is like 4 out and back sections. So you have like heaps of opportunity to see where everyone is on the run. And obviously Sarah could see I was winning and I could see Sarah was winning as well. So it was just, yeah, definitely like really motivating and rewarding to see us both get the title after so much hard work.
Was she chasing you down because she's such a natural runner and you aren't? So like you had that motivation, like Sarah's coming after me.
It was actually interesting because we did quite a few sessions, as I said, beforehand leading into the race together. And one of the key sessions that we do with our coach is a really long brick session where we'll always do somewhere between like 21K and 30K run off the bike. So like when we're doing the 30K, it's really getting towards full Ironman distance. So, but there's of course, like there are many differences in how to train a female for triathlon and how to train a man for triathlon. And the general difference is that women tend to recover much faster from the training that they do than men. So my coach makes a big point about holding me back when we're doing those long brick sessions and making sure I'm just hitting the time that we have to do and not exceeding that by anything. Like even if you're running 1 second faster every K than you should, pull me back. Whereas he kind of just let Sarah go for it. And that is really kind of really sometimes distracting for me when Sarah's, when we're doing these long sessions. You know, their run off the bike is like 2 hours long and she's running time into me. So that's definitely very distracting when I'm getting seemingly my ass kicked by Sarah in the training session. But I always just, you know, obviously focused on what I had to do. But fortunately, she wasn't running me down in the race. It definitely went the other way. But Sarah's a fantastic runner and she's always close to me in our training sessions. So she's a good training partner.
Slight pause in the interview here, Trainiacs, just to thank our sponsor for today, Health IQ, the life insurance agency that gives preferential rates to triathletes, swimmers, cyclists, healthy people.
You get rewarded for taking care of yourself, which is kind of amazing because that's never happened before. So you want to take advantage of this?
Mm-hmm. You go to healthiq.com/triathlon Taryn. That's where all the triathlon specific information is. Or if you just go to Health IQ's website on your own, you can type in the code triathlon Taryn at checkout or when you're talking with a representative, and all those things help Health IQ know just how awesome we are. Lets them know that you came from us and it helps out the podcast.
So thanks to you and Health IQ.
Back to the podcast.
You said that you're not a natural runner and that you need to keep up your volume. Something that I guess applies to all non-natural runners. What were the first things that you did to improve your running? And I think there's a lot of folks out there listening who will probably, their ears are going to perk up at this one because these are probably some important tips. So what were some of the things that you did to, as a non-natural runner, to get better?
It's an interesting concept to hear that I'm a non-natural runner. And the more that I think about it, I wouldn't disagree with you, but I definitely maybe wouldn't agree with you on the same length, because obviously I've done my first full season with my new coach, Cam, and the changes that we've been able to make to my running, from like really simple biomechanical adjustments, has been able to like improve my run like astronomically. So I think that where it's gone wrong for me in the past is not having great coaching and great hands-on coaching that has kind of forced me to make changes in my running style. I've always put like a lot of effort into my run training, but perhaps in some ways like it could have been enhanced much more by just having a coach watch me run and being able to see any bad habits that I've fallen into and so on. So I definitely think that potentially, if we stay on the current trajectory with my running, like I could end up being a natural runner just through the adjustments that we're able to make in day-to-day training to my running style. I'm talking of things like I used to be a real kind of forefoot striker, and now we're changing it to like more of a midfoot to heel strike just because that's the much more efficient marathon style of running. I used to...
All the Born to Run readers are losing their mind right now.
We call it like running on a tightrope. I used to kind of almost run, you know, heel to toe in a straight line. There was never any sort of, my foot strike was always on like a center line. So it just kind of like widened my stance, if you will, while running. Just sort of like really simple things like that. As I said, changed my running astronomically. So it's going to be really good to see this year with some more training behind me. Actually, now I'm entering my first ever kind of like run block, where Cam and I have said, okay, for the next 2 months, we're going to be hitting some serious numbers in the run to try and boost it more in the pre-season. So the run's already elevated during season and we're not having to search for gains, closer towards Kona and so forth. So it's definitely going to be an interesting year to watch how my run unfolds.
So I think that non-natural run comment was something that you made, I want to say it was back in 2014, before you hooked up with Cam Watt, and obviously from the sounds of it went through this, you know, this little bit of a change in technique. Do you think that, you know, that preconceived notion that a lot of age group triathletes or just anyone in general has, that they aren't built for running, can be overcome by a lot of people the same way that you're talking about it now, that, like, I don't know, you seem pumped about it?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, everyone has their own limitations of what their body can and can't do. I think it's more about trying to optimize what you do have. And that's not something that you're necessarily going to be ever able to do by yourself, simply because you can't just watch yourself run. I mean, you can tape yourself and stuff, but you always need different eyes to look at your run, and not everyone's going to be able to tell you the same things. And then you have to obviously use your discretion on what you think are the relevant things that you want to change and what you think may or may not help. But I think for me, I definitely had to have an open mind when Cam and I started to talk about run technique. So my advice would be to anyone out there who's, you know, feels as if they just don't, that, you know, they want to get a bit more out of their run, just, yeah, try and get some new eyes to look at you, or and have an open mind about what changes you could potentially make.
Well, let's now talk about Kona. So obviously a giant race. You were first out of the water, 47 minutes, 28 seconds off the course record. First of all, at the time,
you came flying past me, man. It was shocking.
Did you know you were having such an awesome swim at the time? Like, could you feel that?
Yeah, I knew my swim was on. You know, I've been swimming my whole life, and I'm definitely very aware when I'm swimming well. And the only thing in Kona, though, is, of course, you can probably see where your competition is, like, twice around the U-turns. You can kind of peer back and get a bit of a more accurate sort of gauge where people are. And by the time we hit the first turn, I could see I got some time on these guys, but the pack looked like super large. So
yeah, like, when did it break up? Because Mike Riley was calling out that it was just one giant pack, and that's why you caught me so off guard when you came by, because I thought it was just a pack of like 15 guys, but you came out by yourself.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I don't think the pack really did break up. It was massive. So I probably made some tactical errors in the swim, in a sense that I went so hard at the start of the swim that there was never a chance for anyone to actually swim with me. While in itself that has been my tactic for many races, to be out in front by myself, maybe necessarily this wasn't such a good thing in Kona, because, you know, no one's winning Kona wire to wire ever. So, yeah, that's something that I have to think about next year. I mean, I hope some guys, now that I kind of dangled that sort of 47-minute swim out there, that people might want to step up and try and swim with me to get an advantage for the bike. But, you know, that remains to be seen whether anyone would actually swim that fast, because I don't think it's been done for a while. But I wasn't really conscious of the time much at all in the swim. You know, I wasn't thinking about records. I think that kind of thing is like a bit perfunctory. You know, I'd much rather have a good finish result than a swim record, you know. So I was just kind of doing my thing, and yeah, happened to be close to the record. So I definitely think there's more room for improvement, and with the amount of swimming that we're doing with Cam, we should be able to find some more gains. So yeah, what happens this year in the swim?
So getting out of the water after that tremendous swim, I mean, you know, you did well, you knew you came out of the water first. Were you pumped when you got on the bike, or, you know, where did your head go?
Yeah, I mean, the start of the bike ride is just like phenomenal, coming out of transition and going up Palani there to the hot corner. There's like so many people, and I actually got like some really good photographs of coming up that section with no one else around me, and you can see all the chalk and stuff is on the road, and the crowd is like five deep either side of the road. It was just like such an amazing experience to know that I was the only one there, and you know, all that noise and stuff was just for me. So that was amazing. And that first section through town, I wasn't trying to, you know, consolidate any time gaps. It was just about finding my effort and kind of maybe settling the heart rate a bit, and then obviously seeing where everyone was on that first turnaround up on Kuakini. So just kind of having never done the race before, I just, yeah, wanted to kind of really stay within myself in that first section.
Do you start getting worried when you're out there so far ahead of everyone else by yourself, that, like, on the spectrum of, on the one hand, you're pumped up because you're the first one out, everyone's cheering for you, but on the other hand, you got nobody else to work with, and there's a lot of fast guys in behind you?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, being by yourself in Kona's unless it's like in the last part of the race, it's typically maybe not a good thing. But that's no, I mean, that's pretty much the way that I race every single other time. You know, like in Penticton this year for the ITU Long Distance Worlds, I went head-to-head against Sanders and he only passed me in the last 20 minutes of the race or something. So we were out there for almost 6 hours. I was out there for 6 hours by myself. This is just the way I race. I just thrive on that kind of like one-on-one style racing. You know, it's like I'm really confident about my effort and my pacing, and I just love like going head to head. But then the other thing is I don't really like going head to, you know, myself versus a massive pack of athletes. Like that's a scenario that I'm never going to come off best on. So definitely, yeah, me against the pack in Kona, I led for almost like 3 hours of the race. It's not advantageous to be in that position. So sometime for the race next year, so I'm definitely kind of going to have to evaluate how I can have more people around me to work with, because it's just not a race that you can do by yourself.
I think. By the time Sebastian, Lionel, and Cameron end up passing you, like, did you still have jam in your legs at that point? Or had you spent too many matches trying to hold that lead?
Yeah, within like, it's about a minute, I went from like really being confident in what I was doing. I knew that I had some good time on people behind me, but I couldn't, through that section, there's like some rolling hills and it's really hard to gain perspective of where people are behind you. And I was not expecting a pass at all. And out of nowhere, Sanders just comes like storming past. And it was just like, in that moment, it was just like, oh my God, like, how do I even respond to this? Because I was already kind of on the limit of what I wanted to do, and my expectation of everyone else's limits just like blew me out of the water. So in those minutes after I was passed, Lionel went through, Sebastian was next, Cam Wirth was next. And I sat in behind Cam Wirth for a bit, and the pace was just like unbelievable. Like, it was really kind of inopportune for me because they passed me in like a pretty heavy crosswind section heading up to Harvey. So there was no kind of like filtering through the pack, you know, getting that kind of legal advantage as guys were passing you. It was like full exposure to the crosswind, and it didn't matter where you were sitting in the pack, you know, you all had to work just as hard. So that was definitely where I pushed myself over the limit, was trying to hold the wheel with these guys. And where, if you're kind of dissecting the race this year, it's really interesting because my mentality at the time was, if I don't go with these guys, I'm out of the race. And I think that's what a lot of people were thinking. You know, guys like Jan, who's 2-time defending champion.
Yeah, he was right there and I was not expecting that.
Yeah, he was thinking the same thing. If I don't go with these guys, I'm history. And maybe he wasn't 100% at the time either. So he probably exceeded too much in that moment as well. Whereas you've got now the current champion, like Patrick Langer, who was able to make a decision and say, okay, I'm going to let these guys go and back myself for the run. So it's definitely like a really interesting, so much psychology going on in the race that I was not aware of, having never done the race. But things like that, I ended up riding in a transition too with Patrick Langer. So, you know, in hindsight, obviously, I could have saved my legs like so much more if I just let them ride off up to Harvey and I just continued what I'd been doing for the last 3 hours and riding my own race. So, yeah, there's like so much to learn from racing it. It's just unbelievable.
Well, and I guess you got to decide, like, do you want to be a 420 or a 417 kind of bike and hope that you've got legs for the run and that you can hang on, or go for like a 430 and know that you're going to have decent legs?
When you're talking about like 420 bike splits, it's like coming into the race. That's like,
unheard of.
People have
never
done that before. It's like unprecedented. And then you've got, you know, like the top 10 guys sort of all come in under that mark. So it's just obviously that depending like weather conditions, it's always going to be different every year, but it just, everyone is just like so into blowing themselves, still blowing each other to bits on the bike, that it's just making it like really interesting tactically year after year at the moment. It's definitely like an exciting time, I feel, to be watching and racing Kona, no matter what you're doing, if you're racing or watching from the sidelines.
Watching was fun, probably less painful than you doing, guys.
Yeah.
So you end up, like, right after those guys ended up blowing past you, you get another second punch to the gut that you miss your special needs bag. What was in that bag?
And how did you miss it?
So, yeah, well, I missed it because it just, like, came and went so quick and my bag wasn't there. Maybe I missed the call. I was calling out my number, but I don't know if it was, like, too early or too late. But, yeah, my bag just wasn't there. And at that point, I was still on the pack. So I think, like, Cam Worth was just about to go to the front and drill it. I can't be sure. Maybe Lionel was still there. But I just, yeah, I got there. I discarded my two bottles at Harvey as we were going through the aid station to pick up my next fresh two bottles, which had electrolytes and, like, a little bit of calories. But I had most of my calories in gels on my bike. So after I missed my electrolytes, I had to ride to the next aid station with no fluid at all. And so that was obviously not a good thing. But for the rest of the bike ride, I was just drinking Gatorade and Coke, which I feel as if the biggest difference it made missing my special needs was just not having the hydration element of those electrolytes. And come time to the run, I literally had to stop to pee like four or five times because I just don't feel as if I had the salts to retain any of the fluids that I was taking. So I definitely need to kind of adjust things for next year to maybe make sure I have, like, some sort of, you know, electrolyte on me at all times where I'm not dependent on special needs. It's a funny thing because someone like Freddie Van Leerder missed his special needs and pulled out. Like, it was such a psychological blow to him that he couldn't race having missed his special needs. And then on the other hand, Sebastian Kienle doesn't take special needs at all. So, like, yeah,
yeah,
I can tell you, like,
Rinny, that in, can't think of the year that she did it, but she lost a bottle or two bottles. And
I think that was 2012 or 13, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and still yeah. gutted it out for the run, but you could see that at the end of the run, like, she collapsed. So, like, one bottle makes a huge difference.
That was the year she got up to Leander Cave, and she got maybe 5 meters behind her and was seemingly going to pass her to take the title, and she, in that moment, she was unable to deliver and really faded from that point. So, yeah, like, as I was saying, it's just a funny psychology, the special needs and what it does to athletes. And if you see someone like Sebastian doesn't take it, like, it tells me that maybe I don't need it as well. Just load up the bike. He has, like, four water bottles or something ridiculous that he starts the bike with, but at least he's, like, self-sufficient. And if he does find himself in a situation where, like, he misses something, he's not going to implode mentally because of it. So,
right. Well, it's eliminating it's a factor of error, yeah. Right? A possibility for error.
Yeah, of course. So it's not like, for me, when I missed it, it wasn't a matter of, like, oh shit, my race is over at this point. But it definitely did challenge me to try and make up for what I had missed that I was planning on in the special needs. So
on your website, you say that your ambition is to be world champion.
Flat out. Gutsy. Yeah. I like it.
So what will that take? I mean, we've talked a little bit about some of the changes that you know you need to make based on what you just experienced, but what is it going to take for you to cross that line first?
It's just going to take more time, I think. Just more time and more development at the distance. And obviously, like, a lot of hard work and very tenacious attitude. So I think I have the skill set to win, and I'm definitely going to train myself and prepare myself accordingly in the coming years.
So we'll come full circle as we near the end here. We need to let you get back to your day as you're just starting your day in Australia. Coming full circle, how do you feel about the coffee in Kona?
It was actually fantastic. It's one of those funny things where I'm definitely very kind of, like, perhaps regimented in where I think really good coffee comes from. You know, we're talking, like, you know, 2,500 meters altitude in Ethiopia and Panama and Kenya and Colombia and these things. And Kona is definitely not something it's a place that's not known for specialty coffee very much, but the coffee shop there, Daylight Mind, where we had, like, some felt promotions and stuff there. So I was there really often, and Sebastian actually took me there for, like, breakfast numerous times. I was at Daylight Mind, like, every day, and the coffee there was, like, fantastic. And they had, like, this really good range of local coffees from pretty much every island in Hawaii, every chain of islands. So we had, like, some amazing coffees there. So it was definitely very impressive.
Before we wrap up here, the last thing that I want to talk about is another interview. You said something about how there's a sense of entitlement with the pros, but here you are, you know, you're buds with Sarah Crowley and you're on Wadi Inc. with Heather, mentioned Sebastian a couple of times. So like you're obviously pals with a lot of the pros. I'm curious, like you don't have to mention names or get way too into it because this would probably be an entire other podcast, but like, where does that comment about feeling that there's a bit of a sense of entitlement in the pro ranks come from?
Yeah, I feel as if like I've been doing triathlon for so long and I've been racing. This is another thing that could be up for debate is, you know, how you use the term professional, but I've been racing as a professional for a decade now, as I mentioned, from when I was like 16, 17 years old. And where my comment comes in about the meaning professional, it means like, are you earning a professional wage or are you just racing as a professional? So I feel as if now I kind of like, I would consider myself a professional. And the meaning behind that is also I've done like a very long apprenticeship in the sport. I've come through every distance and I've been doing it for a long time. And I definitely feel as if any results or sponsorship or anything, any support from Ironman that I get these days is something that I've worked really hard to earn. And I feel as if maybe there's always a naivety from some athletes who perhaps don't earn this and just expect things to be given to them or expect things to happen without really doing the work, you know, that typically rewards, you know, that kind of achievement. So we could talk about it a lot, but that's definitely in this sport, you have to earn everything that you want. It's definitely a sport that rewards the hardest worker as well. So I've got no problem standing by those comments.
Yeah, just kind of interesting that when I heard you say it, I was like, you know what? That's a very gutsy thing for somebody to go out and say. Have you ever got any backlash from it? I think that was a few years ago.
I don't think so. I mean, no. I mean, if someone wants to talk about it, you know, I think Twitter's probably the place that everyone likes to go to town on each other on Twitter. But I mean, I think it's probably an attitude that's held by a lot of other pros who definitely put in a lot of hard work as well.
Interesting. Yeah. Another podcast. That would be a very long chat.
Exactly.
We're here to talk about coffee and Kona.
Right.
Thank you very much. Well, yeah, let's wrap things up here, Josh. Where should people go and check you out online?
I guess like all the normal places for social media hedonism. I do like Instagram. I do like Instagram quite a lot. And
what are your handles?
Yeah, any fancy handles?
No, just Josh Amberger. Just real simple.
So, oh, you say Amberger. Yeah.
It's actually, that's another weird thing in itself because it's kind of like the Anglo-Saxon version. It's a German name. I've got like kind of German, Dutch and Irish heritage. And my parents were born in New Zealand, so I'm kind of like a Kiwi as well. But yeah, the Germans would say like Amberger, but I don't know, we say Amberger, but yeah, I don't really care. It's not something that's bothering me at all.
When's the first race that people can cheer you on at?
This year, I think it's going to be the Geelong 70.3 in Australia. It's typically like the strongest 70.3 field we see in Australia each year, and that's February 18, I think. So that'll be my first race back, and then it'll be like full gas preparing for Ironman South Africa again, which is April 15, I believe.
Well, you'll have to work off all those off-season beers very quickly.
Exactly.
Well, good luck to you.
I actually have kind of a bit of a steady intake of that throughout the season. That's the other thing. I also have it of like traveling with beer as well.
Traveling with beer.
Yeah, no.
Very exacting tastes, eh?
I'll be racing this year. Next season, like looking at my schedule, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be racing on most of the continents again. So it's going to be like Australia, South Africa, as I mentioned, Europe and America. So it's going to be, yeah, another full-on year of traveling and racing, and definitely be appreciative if your listeners support me on that quest to Kona in 2018.
Absolutely. Well, if you come back to Canada, I highly recommend our Kokanee. That would be
Kokanee. That's the beer you're recommending.
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna recommend an OV to the. I don't want to scare them off of Canadian beer.
But do you reckon I'd be able to find some of that in Calgary? Because
oh yes,
yes, yeah, they'll have one or two.
Yeah. I've raced Calgary the last couple of years, so I think I might go back there again next year. So we'll see.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you, Josh. Everyone, check you out. And yeah.
Hopefully we'll see you in luck. Kona.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see
Fantastic.
You
Fantastic.
Thanks a lot,
thank
Josh.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Trainiacs, I hope you dug that interview. Just a few things before you take off and get onto your next podcast. First off, if you want to get just the best Triathlon Terran stuff filtered for you every week, go to triathlonterran.com/the hits. Enter your email address, and every week, instead of having to sift through all the bad stuff to get to the good, we'll send you out a weekly email with our most popular YouTube video from the previous week, Instagram posts, spot in a podcast, or even some of the favorite gear that I'm trying out. Could be a book, could be some tech, whatever. If you enter your email address, we'll make it easy for you. Get to your best stuff every week by going to triathlonterran.com/the hits.
And next, if you want to support the show at all, you can go to triathlonterran.com and take your pick from a few things we've got there that you can work into your day-to-day training. We've got coaching plans if you are looking for one. We've got our awesome-looking Trainiac gear. And if you click through the Amazon banner ad or click on any of the products that we mention or link to and you purchase anything at one of the affiliate sites like Amazon, it doesn't cost you anything extra, but we get a small commission. And of course, everything adds up and helps us a lot to keep this thing going.
And finally, if you want to get a shout out personally for your family members, Tri Club, whatever you want, leave a rating for us over on iTunes, good, bad, whatever. And in the next podcast, we'll shout out everyone who in the previous week gave us an iTunes podcast rating. That really helps us get discovered there. And if you want to give a shout out to anyone specifically, share the podcast with someone and CC me in at Taren, Taren, at triathlonterran.com, and send us the message that you want to send to your loved one, friend, family member, most hated nemesis out on the tri course, whatever it is.